You know, when we talk about real estate investing, we talk about like buying the real estate, right? We talk about the apartment buildings, whatever. But right. What you really don't understand, especially in this multifamily space, you're operating a small business. And, you know, when we talk about putting these pieces in place, what you're doing is you're building the infrastructure of a business. You know, you're wearing the marketing hat, you're wearing the revenue hat, you're wearing the acquisitions hat, like you're wearing all of these different variables that go into owning and operating a small business.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Blue Oak Capital is a Houston-based private equity firm focused on the acquisition of cash flow producing multifamily real estate across the U.S. Brian and Cody, welcome to the show.
Sam, pleasure to be here, man. Appreciate you having us.
Thanks for having us, Sam. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Hey man, pleasure's mine. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes in the show, and maybe one of you can take this and just answer this for the firm itself. But the three questions are, where did you guys start? Where are you now? And how did you get there? So I'll leave it to you guys to figure out which one of you wants to tackle that.
Well, kind of high level overview. We all are Houston based. Brian and I are two of the three managing partners here at our company. We all collectively met through networking channels and whatnot, and then formulated our company late 2019, early 2020. And, you know, the biggest kind of glue that's kind of held us together is our value propositions and our complementary skill sets. And really that how the team has meshed, and that's been how we've been able to grow. Right. And so, but since our inception in late 2019, you know, like you mentioned, we've, you know, acquired and partnered in 847 units as general partners, and looking to do some really big acquisitions this year, $100 million plus in acquisitions this year, hopefully. And really, it just comes down to great partners, great relationships, and just a great network of, you know, investors and partners around us. So what I miss, Brian?
I think you hit the nail on the head.
What are some things when you guys, because this is a common, you know, I hear this discussion a lot on this show, but I want to hear your take on what it was like figuring out, one, that you were onto something, and then finding the partners, even if it was within the same network. Like there's a lot of back and forth and like, hey, should we, could we, maybe we'll build something, maybe we won't. How did you guys navigate that?
Go ahead and tell your story, Brian, then I have something that I want to add to that.
Yeah, I think I knew I was onto something when I saw a lot of people around me were having success in commercial real estate. So you talk about commercial real estate. Cody and I both come from the single family residential investment space. We were both doing that, Cody for way longer than I was doing it for about 2 years. And I was kind of looking around and watching guys build their portfolio and seeing people, just regular people that were just like you and me, doing big things. So why not? Why not me? Was the question I really asked myself. Why couldn't I do that as well? Especially, you know, as I was transitioning and getting a little bit older. I'm 33 right now. So, you know, back in my early 30s, as I'll call it, I guess I'm still there. But I was looking around and going, just regular guys doing this. There's regular guys buying these massive $20, $30, $40 million properties. So like, why not me? So it all starts with education. So it became a lot about educating myself, joining a mentorship group. And that's when I also met Cody and John. And that's when I knew we had something, was because these are two great guys. It all starts with the foundation of good business ethics. You want to work with people that you want to go grab a beer with, you want to grab a cup of coffee with, people you want to hang out with on the weekend. If you don't like your business partners, you're probably not going to get very far. So that's when I knew personally that I found something good, because I had two guys that I really enjoyed hanging out with, really enjoyed spending time with. So the idea of being on calls at 9, 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, going through underwriting, basically giving up your nights, giving up your weekends, kind of hustling to make it happen. These are two guys I had no problem doing that with. It wasn't an inconvenience, right? So once we got that together, we started forming our team. You really just start to see things flourish. It took a lot of time, a lot of slow growth, as we like to say. It took about a year and a half to get that first deal done. But that for us, that's for me, at least, that's how I knew I was onto something.
Yeah. And I echo Brian's sentiments that, you know, I was exposed to this idea of syndication back in 2011 through a local networking event here in Houston. And at the time, I had no idea what I was being exposed to. All I knew, it was just this investor on stage partnering 17 people. Everybody got passive income and everybody was happy. And I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome. You know, a lot better than the wholesaling, single family wholesaling I was doing at the time. And, you know, fast forward several years later, you know, after kind of having to go through some refocus and some redevelopment of goals and things like that, you know, really was getting frustrated in the path that I were taking as far as trying to find a fit for me. What was ideal for my investing thesis? What was going to get me to my financial independence? You know, all the things that we've all hear about and are challenged with. And, you know, making that transition to multifamily, you could look back and you see, man, there was so much wealth generated and created over the past decade from multifamily investments. You know, I mean, there was just so much wealth that was being created, and the fundamentals projected an even more positive forecast for years to come. And, you know, it was just really, that was kind of very eye-opening. And so, and then having gone through some very hard, expensive lessons along my journey to get to this point in multifamily, it was a kind of a no-brainer that once, you know, once I met John, once I met Brian, and we saw the synergies and we saw the power at B, you know, with all of us working together, you know, we just put the blinders on, stayed disciplined, stayed focused. And I think that was really where we knew, like, hey, the future is going to be very, very bright here if we just be patient.
That's something you mentioned there, Brian, was that you said slow growth. You know, people want, I think, they want the quick hit, you know, the instant success, which it doesn't sound like you guys had that. I think you mentioned calls at 1 a.m., 1.5 years. What were some challenges that you guys faced in getting your first deal done?
There's a lot, obviously. I mean, look, everybody has the same challenge when you're first starting. You have no credibility, you have no experience. And I would argue that most people probably don't have the network they need to go out there and buy these multi-million dollar deals, right? So it's really, how do you put that first foot forward and how do you really build the infrastructure for a sustainable business? And I think it all starts with that. So, you know, Brian could attest to this too, right? I mean, it all starts with number one is relationships. Who are the people that are doing the deals? Who are the people that are really having success in the same strategies that we wanted to model? And then who are the people that are going to help us get there? Whether that be partners or investors, whatnot, we need to go meet the people first, because we all know, I mean, this idea of have a good deal and the money will come, that's such a false adage that's out there, right? I mean, if you don't, you can have the best deal in the world, but if you don't have the money to back you to do it, you're a dead duck in the water. So I think it really started with building out relationships in that framework first, and then everything else kind of expanded off there. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I think when you're new, you don't know how to put the puzzle together is how I like to, the analogy I like to use, right? Like buying these properties is just putting a puzzle together. And when you're new, you don't have all the pieces. It's like you were to buy a puzzle at the store and it's missing a bunch of pieces. You're like, oh, this is a bad puzzle. Well, it's not necessarily a bad puzzle. It's just that you don't have the pieces you need. You know, do you have the KP to go and sign a loan if you need it? Do you have somebody who has experience in asset management, especially if you're brand new? Because if I'm an investor and you're telling me like this is your first deal and you've never done this before, that makes me a little nervous. So having somebody on your team that can give you that credibility, that can sort of be your safety net, you don't have that when you're first getting started. You don't have the relationships, as Cody was saying. And then with the equity, that's super important too. Properties are expensive now. You know, starting 5 years ago, you could get a pretty big deal close raising $3-5 million. Now that's like a 50 or 60 unit, depending on what market you're in, right? So can you put the team together to go and raise 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 or more $1 million? Do you have the relationships with those co-sponsors or with those equity partners to get the deal done? There's just a lot of things. Cody is our head of acquisition. He knows how much legwork it takes, not only for those things I mentioned, but insurance quotes, property managers, all the people that are involved in the closing process. You just don't have the relationships yet. And that's where that first 12 to 18 months of getting started is. It's really building those relationships and understanding, you know, what are you getting into?
Tell me real quick, just briefly cover this, the 6-step framework for raising $1 million. I mean, everybody struggles out of the gate, just like you said, like you said, Cody, was that, you know, find the deal and the money will come. Nonsense. I think that myth has been debunked too many times. What's your guys' 6-step framework if somebody wants to raise $1 million as fast as they can?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most important skill sets you obviously need to have in the business, probably one of the most difficult too, right? How many stories have you heard of capital raisers that, oh, I can go raise $1 million, $2 million, and they fall flat on their face? I being one of those, you know, on your first capital raise, it's very difficult. So, you know, Brian, you want to go ahead and kick it off here with the framework that worked for us?
Absolutely. So our framework, it's very simple. It sounds simple, but the hard part is the execution. And I think what makes it even harder is persistence and consistency over a long period of time, because you can build out this, you can follow these steps and write them down and check each box. But if you're not consistently managing them and moving them forward all at the same time, it's where you can eventually fall flat. So the first one is just having a really strong brand. That's something we're really important about. Like when people see Blue Oak Capital, do they know? So do they have some sort of relationship with it? Do they know Cody? Do they know Brian? Do they know our third partner, John? Do they know a mix of us? What are their thoughts? What are their feelings? What are their emotions when they think about Blue Oak Capital? Do they have positive thoughts about Blue Oak Capital? You got to have that brand. So creating a brand, creating a logo, that's something that's really, really, really important. A lot of people don't think of. Now, you can go out there and you can raise capital without one. It is possible. But if you're talking about growth and scale, you definitely want to have a brand. And after that brand, you definitely want to have a website. It's 2022 when we're recording this podcast. It's your business card, right? People are going to go Google you. They're going to go look you up. They're going to see what you've done. And if you don't have a legit website where people can feel like you're a professional, you're somebody in the industry who's serious, then you're going to have problems too. Because if you're telling me like, hey, you want to take $100,000 from me and you don't even have a website, you don't even have a logo, unless you and I have been friends for 20 years and I just trust you like that, it's not very likely that I'm going to go and, you know, just be comfortable raising, you know, giving you money, right? Yeah. Once you have that brand, once you have that website, you want to start laying some infrastructure in your website. You know, we're really big on having a CRM. So that's one of the steps. And then leveraging that CRM to keep your investors updated, which is another step, which is sending out a newsletter. So once you have that brand, you have that website, you want to make sure things are starting to talk to each other. So we have a CRM system where we're constantly feeding people, you know, we have a funnel, we're constantly feeding people into the CRM, whether it's through our podcast, it's through our meetup, it's through our newsletter, which is one of the six steps. You want to create that update for your investors that are in your database. You want to make sure you're building out that investor database of quality investors, people that are pre-qualified. And if you're planning on doing 506Bs, so people you've had a conversation with, if you're doing 506Cs, you obviously want to make sure they're accredited investors. So that's four of the steps. The last one, I think that's really, well, not the last one, but the fifth one that I think is really important is social media. You know, we're really big on just being out there, making sure that people are aware of who you are and you're growing your brand presence. So, you know, we're big on leveraging platforms, Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, there's other platforms, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok's becoming really popular. We're not on there yet. But I think if you're getting started, we're talking about raising that first $1 million. You want to pick one or two and really stick with it, because it can be a full-time job doing social media, whether it's yourself or somebody you're paying to manage all of these accounts. So, you know, when we first got started, we really leaned in heavily on LinkedIn and Facebook. Those were our two preferred choices. And then as we've continued to grow, you know, we're starting to layer on things like Instagram. You know, we'll look at things like Twitter and TikTok down the road, but you really want to start and lay a strong foundation on one of those social media platforms. And then the last one is just having that thought leadership platform. You know, we talk about blogs. I just mentioned that. We talked about our podcast. We talked about our meetup. So just to kind of reemphasize this, we've got having a strong brand, having a website, using a CRM, sending out a newsletter, making sure you're on social media, and then trying to become a thought leader in the space. You want to create content, whether it's a podcast, a meetup, a blog, maybe you're creating short reels or clips on YouTube. Those are the six steps that we really followed for that first opportunity where we were able to raise over $1 million.
Yeah. And Sam, look, I think it's really important people understand, like, all of these pieces don't work on their own in silos. They all have to work in conjunction with one another, right? If you think about a visualization of a funnel, right? You have the widest part of the funnel, the top of the funnel is the most critical piece, because that's where you're getting the most engagement. That's where you're connecting with as many people as many touch points. And then you go to the middle of the funnel, which is where you're nurturing those relationships. You're actually curating relationships to where you get to the bottom of the funnel, which is where the solidification of that relationship and that trust is cemented to where ultimately they want to invest with you or partner with you or work with you in whatever fashion. But I think the key takeaway is those six steps that Brian highlighted, which you did a great job, is, you know, they were all critical to our framework in helping us to get to that first $1 million raise, but they all have to work simultaneously together with one another. And so I think it's important for people to understand that it's multiple, you know, layers within the funnel that have to work in conjunction together.
Yeah. Once you have those first few layers, the other ones are about nurturing, right? People are listening to your podcast, they're reading your newsletter, they're looking at your blogs, they're going to your meetup. And that's the nurturing process. So you can build relationships to people without calling them every week. So,
right. And I think the one thing that you hit on there, Brian, in all of this is consistency of execution. That's the hardest part, I think, of it, is that discipline side of it, where it's like, okay, now you got people coming in, now you got your website built, you got your infrastructure, but then is your newsletter going out every week? I mean, it took me until, I'm embarrassed to say it, June of 2021. Here we go. You know, I'm sharing my weaknesses here to get a weekly newsletter out. And I've done it every week since. It's like, but it was like, I will get this done. And once you do that, of course, you know, that's been instrumental in building, you know, relationships that I just had never nurtured before. And it's a weekly newsletter. It's a total pain. Getting my newsletter out on Friday, I'm like, crud, that's got to get done. Like, I gotta write the text for that. Of course, I got help putting the rest of it together and getting it sent out from my marketing manager, but it's still, you know, I still have to put work into that every week.
Oh, sorry, Sam. You know, as I tell you, man, what you're discussing here and what we're talking about is, you know, when we talk about real estate investing, we talk about like buying the real estate, right? We talk about the apartment buildings, whatever. But right, what you really don't understand, especially in this multifamily space, you're operating a small business. And, you know, when we talk about putting these pieces in place, what you're doing is you're building the infrastructure of a business. You know, you're wearing the marketing hat, you're wearing the revenue hat, you're wearing the acquisitions hat, like you're wearing all of these different variables that go into owning and operating a small business. And so to your point, I think most people don't realize that when you get in, we always talk about real estate, but you're like, oh crap. Like, oh, I've got to go build up my marketing funnel. Oh, I've got to go build up my brand. I've got to go do all these other things that, you know, you don't think about. So it's not suited for everybody. No, you know, I hate marketing. I mean, I'll be candid with you. I hate it. You don't want me picking logos and stuff like that because I'm too simple-minded. But thank God that I got Brian and John that have a better eye for that than I do. But the point is, you know, it is a critical part of the business for sure.
It is. Yeah. And I think that's one of the mindset shifts I had to make, you know, in the last 2 or 3 years was that especially, there's two things that we need in this business. I say this, well, gosh, I feel like every show, we need deals, we need money. And if you don't have both of those things, then you don't have anything here in a real estate business. And so like 70% of what I feel like I do is marketing. Like finding the deals is almost secondary to first building out the marketing side of it, which is kind of a twist, I think, from what most of us think early on. Like, oh, we're going to go buy real estate. Well, you're not going to buy a $30 million property if you haven't done the marketing first because you don't have investors to go buy it. So start there. I love that. So Brian, thanks for taking the time to break that down. I know we're spending a little more time here on this than maybe what we planned on, but I think this is a valuable conversation. I'd like to use this as a segue though. What are you guys doing, I guess, on the finding deals, the acquiring deals side of this equation? What are you guys doing right now to be competitive?
Great question. And it's a problem that everybody's having, right? I mean, you know, everybody's trying to figure out how do they stand out for one another. I think those who are willing to be bold and get uncomfortable and take a little bit more risk, especially up front, are the guys that are standing out. You know, and I think right now, especially at the time of this recording, where we're going into a very aggressive rate hike environment, rising interest rate environment, we're already hearing rumblings of investors wanting to sit out or, oh, they're just going to take a pause and things like that. You know, I think the guys that like us who are still going to remain active, still going to keep our finger on the pulse, still adjust to what the market's going to give us and stay tuned, I think those are the guys that are going to succeed. And so what does it take to be competitive? Again, you got to be willing to get uncomfortable. What does that mean? Well, you got to find a way, you know, to come up with the price guidance that these brokers are giving you, you know, and now we're seeing a little bit more flexibility because of rates and the capital markets. But, you know, you have to find a way to find the story behind these opportunities, right? You have to be willing to put up risk capital up front. I mean, right now, let's be honest, the guys that are writing the bigger checks, those are the guys that are winning the deals. I mean, it's that simple. So, you know, guys that are putting up $500,000 of non-refundable risk capital up front to get these deals awarded, those are how deals are trading right now. And if you're not comfortable with doing that, hey, I get it. It's a hard pill to swallow, but that's the reality of the market, you know? So you have to find a way to go make that happen and be the ones to kind of play with the big boys, so to speak, if you want to win opportunities.
Yeah. And I think to add on to that, because I know Cody does our acquisitions, but I can tell you what I see from afar is one way to be competitive is to have really strong relationships with the brokers. You know, when you have a relationship that you've been nurturing for 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, however long it's been, when you've closed deals, obviously that helps a lot. When you've done business and you've helped them put food on the table, that definitely helps a lot. But we've learned that the more deals you do, the more the brokers want to go fight for you. The lenders want to go fight with you. Everybody on your team starts to come around to see like, hey, we're gonna do our best to help you, get this deal awarded. And the relationship and the communication side with the brokers are super important because, as Cody mentioned, we'll go to our deal and they're like, oh, this deal is $25 million, and then having Cody's calling daily, constantly staying on top of the broker, like, hey, what's going on, what type of offers you getting, and you end up finding out that all the offers are coming in at $23 million, right? And you thought it was going to be $25 million, but if Cody didn't have that great relationship and the brokers didn't have that trust, and giving him that type of intel can help him be competitive, that's something that a new person would have trouble doing, right? So I think that communication piece, relationship piece, is a way to be competitive and not being transactional with the broker.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. And I want to expand on that, Sam, if we have a few minutes, because I think a lot of people, especially for any new first-time investors, they're hearing this and they think that building relationships is taking brokers out to coffee or lunch. And I'm just going to tell you right now, that's a complete waste of time. And I'll tell you why, because you are one of 1,000 people that are calling brokers every single day sourcing the same opportunities. You taking them to lunch doesn't set you apart. Okay. Yeah, it shows a little effort, but it really doesn't distinguish you. If you want to really build a relationship with the broker, your number one objective should be to get to that first deal. Well, how do you do that? You got to show up for every property tour. You have to analyze all of the deals that you think that are true of interest, but you have to give feedback. That's so critical. People undervalue that. The brokers appreciate feedback. Even if you're, 50% off of their price guidance, they still want the feedback, right? They still want, because that's how they're going to learn who you are and what your investing thesis is, what you're looking for. But it also helps them gauge the market too. Like Brian said, hey, if I've got 10 offers and they're all coming 2 million under whisper, that's information they need to take back to their seller and say, hey, look, the market's not here. We need to adjust. So they want the feedback. So you got to be visible. You got to be in front of the brokers. You got to give feedback. That's absolutely critical. The next thing is you got to get to that first transaction. And when you get to that first transaction, when you finally get that opportunity, you have to make it a point to be the absolute best buyer you can be. Right. And so, listen, you're going to eat some crap for it. You're going to have to take a couple, shots on the chin, but you have to be the absolute best buyer that you can be on that first transaction. Because as Brian said, when you do that, when you solidify that transaction and it goes smoothly, I'm not saying go in carelessly, and I'm not saying go not fight for something that is not right. But what I'm saying is don't go in a nickel and diming battle over $25K when you're buying a $15 million deal. Oh, you want to retrade for 25 grand. I mean, come on, that's a great way to lose credibility. That's pennies when you're talking about these big multi-million dollar deals, right? But when you close the transaction and it goes smoothly and the brokers see that, hey, you're very easy to work with, guess what's going to happen on the next one? They're going to go to bat for you. And the vendors that you're working with, they're going to go to bat for you. And that's only going to make it easier. And that's the snowball that we talk about. So something that I just want to make sure to reemphasize, don't focus on taking people out to lunch. Go focus on getting deals done. And that's how you build relationships.
Man, I think that's great. That is absolutely perfect advice, and it comes from experience. So I like that. Focus on getting the first transaction done. Because yeah, like you said, Brian, once you start becoming that person that puts food on their table, you become a much more important part of their life. So that's really, really cool. Gentlemen, I thank you for taking the time to come on the show today and share with us your experience, how you guys have grown your company so quickly in such a short period of time, the ways to effectively raise your first $1 million, how you guys are staying competitive, and then really what it takes right now to thrive in today's marketplace. So certainly appreciate you guys taking the time to break all of that down. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, Sam, thank you again for having us on the show, man. It's been fun. Listen, we're not hard to find. You can find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, as Brian mentioned. If you want to check us out, you can go to our website, www.blueoakinvest.com. You can check out all of our various resources and thought leadership platforms that we have available to you there. But if you really want to connect with us directly, you can reach out to us at Brian or Cody at blueoakinvest.com.
Cody and Brian, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us,
That would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.